Hello and welcome to another episode of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real World Perspectives. My name is Diana Isaacs. I am joined with Natalie Bellini, and you will notice we are together in person at the Diabetes Technology Meeting, DTM, in San Francisco, California. We had a little pre-meeting meeting today, but we figured we'd get on and do a quick podcast because there's been some really exciting news in the last couple of weeks on semaglutide. So that's right, another GLP-1 talk because there's so much to talk about. But I think there's been a couple big things that we want to talk about. So the first one is that Rybelsus oral semaglutide got the cardiovascular indication. So meaning now it is FDA approved to treat people with type 2 diabetes that have cardiovascular disease to reduce their risk of cardiovascular events. This is the first oral GLP, well, this is the only oral GLP-1, but it's the first and only oral GLP-1 to get this indication. So Natalie, what do you think about this?
I think this is a wonderful thing. We've always hesitated because there are people who are, you know, they walk into our offices and say, I'm never going to take an injection. And you think, well, I'm good at this. I can encourage it. And they won't. So we use Rybelsus for people that really are injection averse for lots of different reasons. But there's always this underlying feeling of, but there's no cardiovascular risk reduction that we know and love about injectable GLP, injectable semaglutide. So the idea that now we can do this confidently as clinicians just gives us one more reason to say, really, people and the ADA guidelines say use GLP-1 early and often. And now for those that won't inject or that would rather not inject, I mean, you know, some people just have that. I think this is a great, it's basically a relief.
It is. So I'm not surprised the indication came because we know SOUL has been published previously and that showed the cardiovascular benefit. But I think it's really important now that it has the indication because otherwise it's like, well, you could use this oral medication, but it doesn't have the indication. And certainly before SOUL was published and we had only the Pioneer 6 study, and that was not designed to show superiority. Right. So we knew oral semaglutide was safe, but we didn't know if it had the additional benefit. And so now we're assured, we've seen the data, you have the FDA approved indication. And I think now people can feel very confident in their choice to use the oral medication. And like you said, like there are just people that do not want to inject, that feel much more comfortable with a daily pill. And so we can offer that option to people.
I'm thrilled. And I think we're going to see a bigger uptake in it because of that. Yeah. Because so many people, it's hard to find the person with type 2 diabetes that doesn't, you know, that you don't want to reduce cardiovascular risk, right?
Right.
You're looking at cholesterol, you're looking at blood pressure, you're looking at weight, and you're looking at diabetes. I mean, they have all these challenges. And so to me, it was always like, but if they do have a heart attack, is it that I used the wrong thing? You're going to question yourself clinically. And so we were always a little bit, do I do it? Do I not do it? Now I feel completely comfortable saying, you know what, you want this instead. We're absolutely willing to use either one.
Right. We can offer it and feel confident in that choice. As a reminder, it does need to still be taken in a special way, that it needs to be taken on an empty stomach, separated at least 30 minutes from other pills, food, drinks. It can be taken with up to 4 ounces of water. That is it. So it's very important to educate people on the right way to take it. But if it's taken that way, then the absorption is very good and we can feel confident in
that they're getting that benefit. Absolutely.
Right. And I mean, there's going to be updates coming too, because we're expecting next year, there's going to be a revised formulation that will be a little bit more potent. So right now, like the starting dose is 3 milligrams per day. And it goes up to 14 milligrams per day, but it is expected the dosing formulations are going to change next year. So stay tuned on that. We'll definitely let you know before that happens. And then I think the other exciting thing is that they're saying we go via a pill. So high doses of semaglutide, oral semaglutide, 25 and 50 milligrams may be coming in the future as well. And so we don't know the cardiovascular outcome on that because that's for weight management. But still, you know, exciting.
And super exciting because, again, there are people who do not want to inject. There are people who would much more, they're used to swallowing pills. A lot of these people are taking other medications. And again, yes, there is this, you know, 30-minute no other food or drink, just water, up to 4 ounces. But, you know, the people that I have using oral semaglutide, we have them get little tiny juice glasses. And that way they're not taking too much water. They're not, you know, you fill this glass, drink it with your water, you're good to go. And we're moving the rest of their medications either a little bit later in the day. I mean, it really is 30 minutes, but sometimes it's like, I'm trying to get out the door. Fine, let's move everything else to bedtime, right? We're much more liberal about medication dosing if we have a reason for it, right? And so, look, you could take your levothyroxine and your blood pressure pill at night. You can take your oral semaglutide in the morning and you're good to go if that timing is difficult. So we can make this work for people, and I'm excited about
that. I think the other thing is a lot of people feel more comfortable starting with a pill because the pill is taken daily versus the injection is once a week. You know, the longer half-life, people get a little nervous. They're like, okay, this is in my system a whole week. And although technically this is in your system a whole week too, but somehow I think taking it daily just feels better. So I think it's a nice way to transition. And then over time, people can always choose if they want to go with the weekly injectable, they can. But I think this is an easier way to transition.
I think so too. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
So that's very exciting. And this kind of brings us into kind of the second part of what we wanted to talk about today, which is still semaglutide. But it's really, hey, is semaglutide is this cardiovascular benefit from the weight loss, from the glucose lowering, or is there something else in the molecule itself, irrespective of weight loss and glucose lowering, that has these cardiovascular benefits? And so very recently published in The Lancet, there was a study. It was a pre-specified study from the SELECT trial, which was a large cardiovascular outcome trial with the injectable semaglutide for weight loss, so the 2.4 milligram Wegovy. And that trial, I mean, that was published in the past, 20% reduction in 3-point MACE. So clearly the benefit. But in this pre-specified analysis, what they looked at was, hey, is there a difference? Like people that lost a lot more weight or people's that their waist circumference, you know, they lost more inches. Did they have a greater reduction in cardiovascular events? And very interestingly, there wasn't really correlations like that. There was a little bit with waist circumference, but not with weight loss. And so I think that really begs the question, is this just a molecule thing? It's like a disease modifying agent. It's not just, oh, you lost this amount of weight. I mean, Natalie, what do you think?
So it's interesting because I think when we first started using daily liraglutide, people would come back in after a week because we'd call them because we were really nervous about what are they getting and do they like it? And is it, you know, GI side effects and all of those things. And how do you feel? I feel great. What do you mean you feel great? I feel great. What do you mean you feel great? And I think that it's that reduction in inflammation that we know that there is a reduction in inflammatory markers with GLP-1. And so I think that this reduction in cardiovascular risk happens pretty quickly. And it also is really about that reduction in inflammation as much as it is about weight loss. And so the real other question is, do we keep people on it even if they don't lose as much weight just for that cardiovascular risk? So this is bringing up all kinds of interesting clinical questions about those kinds of situations.
It's really interesting. I mean, it kind of reminds me of statins a little bit. We put people on statins, we keep them on it. Even if their LDL is at goal, we know there's cardiovascular benefits, we keep them on it. And it's starting to seem like this class, or at least semaglutide, the molecule, has these cardiovascular benefits irrespective of kind of what we see with A1C lowering and with weight loss. And it's really, I guess it's just interesting also to think about the whole class as a whole, GLP-1 agonist, GLP-GIP agonist, future triple agonist. Is each one going to act a little bit differently based on if it's a dual agonist, a triple agonist? And kind of this reminds me a little bit of SURPASS-CVOT, which isn't published yet, but has been shared at several scientific meetings now. And so we know that it demonstrated non-inferiority to dulaglutide, Trulicity, despite the fact that it had way more weight loss, much more A1C lowering. It didn't demonstrate overall superiority. So it really just kind of begs the question of these are, you know, molecules, like you said, the inflammation or something. Because even when you think about dulaglutide, it's not very potent for glucose lowering.
Comparative to the other, I mean, it is, but not compared to the other real PGIP available on the market now, right? Like these other ones are, we use it, but not, I mean, I go to the other ones first and go backwards if I need to because of insurance, because of whatever, but I typically don't start with it.
Right. Especially for the weight loss.
Right.
Now this is like getting me thinking. I'm like, what would happen if you use dulaglutide in people for, I guess, that don't have diabetes, that just have obesity and have cardiovascular disease? Like, would it show a benefit even though there's not that much weight loss just because of its like disease modifying activity?
Right. Is it decreasing that inflammation?
Right. Which we'll never know that because no one's going to do that clinical trial. But but it's just, it's very interesting. I want to know more. I want to know, you know, I really want to better understand. I actually wish we could see tirzepatide and semaglutide go head to head just for the cardiovascular outcomes. They've done other types of analyses, you know, with retrospective data, but I think unless it's like a head to head.
True randomized control.
Right. Right. We're not going to know.
And how do you pick which one? A lot of it has to do with insurance coverage. Right. A lot of it for us is which GLP-1 is covered, how are we getting, or GLP-GIP, right? How are we doing that? But I do love the idea that each molecule may have a different cardiovascular risk reduction because of those individualities, right? And the molecules themselves.
Right.
And I think that what this is kind of pulling out is that, we're not looking, it doesn't have to do with waist circumference. It doesn't have to do with total body loss. It has to do with something else.
Right. And I think now probably the safest way is to go based on our FDA approved indications when we can. I mean, we know semaglutide has the indication for kidney disease. It also has for obesity and MASH now, versus tirzepatide has the sleep apnea with obesity. So it's like they've got to prove it in the clinical studies. We really just don't know if it's a class effect or a molecule effect.
And I think as other molecules come out and are, you know, in these dual and triple analogs that are pending, when we look at their cardiovascular risk, where is that going to fall into this whole thing, right? I mean, it's going to be interesting.
So interesting. And that, I know a topic we're both passionate about is GLP-1 use in people with type 1 diabetes, which is an area that, you know, we need to collect more data. I think there's a lot of positive data now showing the benefits on glycemia, on weight. But if these cardiovascular outcomes are molecule specific, then wouldn't we also want them to have access to these molecules? So it would be so nice to have these cardiovascular outcomes in people with type 1 diabetes as well, so that we could get them approved.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I know that, you know, the data shows that it works. We know this. We know that there have been multiple small trials. And actually, part of this, we're at this diabetes technology meeting. And today we were talking about CGM and primary care and AID and primary care. And yet someone even brought up GLP-1 with type 1s in this meeting, right? We are all using it to some extent, depending on who you are and where your practice is and your coverage and those kinds of things. But it is, you know, how long do we wait for that? How long do we wait for the indication? Because my gut says, do I wait for it to come from the FDA because I want to give this person a GLP-1 because I'm worried about their cardiovascular risk because they've had diabetes for so long, because they also have other comorbid conditions, they're overweight or they've got hypertension, and, you know, they're these same people that also then have, you know, type 1 on top of it. So
yeah, it would be really hard to power a study.
Exactly.
Diabetes, but
we'd need so many people.
Yeah.
Right.
But maybe we can get some good retrospective observational data to build the case. Yeah.
Well, a lot to be done.
Yeah, so much to be done. I'm sure we're going to hear a lot more about this at the meeting. We will report back after we've attended all the great sessions here. We can't wait. But as for now, that wraps up this episode of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real World Perspectives from San Francisco.
Thanks, everyone.